Episode 11 of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. We're back after a slightly extended break due to busyness and life, but we are here to do episodes 2.03 and 2.04 this week. As usual, if you've got thoughts about our last episode or about anything we're going to say today, you can contact us on Twitter, Tumblr, or email. Our Twitter is NATWpodcast at Twitter. Email is natwpodcast@gmail.com, and our lovely Tumblr is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. Of course, you can also always hit us up on Hyperbole, put anything you want in the comments there or on any of the posts about Teen Wolf that we've got going currently. To start off the first episode, Ice Pick, Karen is going to do her recap for that, and then we shall go ahead.
Okay, so Allison pulls up to a gas station to fill her car and is kidnapped. She's brought to the Hale House, where she finds her father tied up, only to realize that this is part of a training exercise. Chris explains that the men in their family are the soldiers and the women are the decision makers. After Allison escapes and leaves, we see one of the hunters attacked by the Kanama. In the next scene, we meet Erica. She is a student at Scott's school who has epilepsy. After having a seizure and going to the hospital, Derek finds her and offers her the bite. She takes it. Jackson is in class with Matt, who's complaining that Jackson broke the lens on his camera. He suddenly tunes into the video they're watching and realizes that Lydia must be immune to the bite. He thinks she passed that immunity on to him, and that's why he can't turn into a werewolf. After their confrontation, Lydia's in the bathroom crying when she sees a hallucination of Peter walking around the school. Meanwhile, Stiles is buying the keys to the ice rink off of Boyd for the night so Allison and Scott and Stiles and Lydia can go on a double date. Chris tells Allison to keep an eye on Lydia, but she thinks she's fine. However, during their double date, Lydia hallucinates again and thinks she sees Wolfsbane growing out of the ice and Peter buried underneath it. Victoria then purposely injures herself as an excuse to go to the hospital and talk to Scott's mom, where she confirms her suspicion that Scott and Allison haven't actually stopped seeing each other. Scott, meanwhile, feels it's his responsibility to keep Derek from turning anyone else into a werewolf, whether it's voluntary or not. They figure out that Boyd is the next target, but Scott is too late and Boyd has already accepted the bite. The episode ends with Deaton deciding to finally talk to Scott about what he knows, and we learn that he's familiar with Chris and the hunters. The episode ends with a frustrated Jackson trying to push his truck out of the mud. He ends up lifting the back wheel straight up off the ground right before the end credits roll. So what are your two favorite lines from this episode?
This episode was actually really funny. It had a lot of yeah. really funny lines, as opposed to kind of the last couple of episodes, which were very intense. And one of my favorites was when they were looking for, when Coach is announcing that they're, you know, still looking for Isaac, he's saying, you know, if anyone sees him, you know, go to the police, go to a teacher, or you can call me. And then he looks at Greenberg and he says, except for you, Greenberg, don't call me for anything. I'm not kidding. Don't call me. You shouldn't even have my number. And the delivery is just fantastic. Coach was on fire in the last two episodes, these two episodes that we watched. It was just, he was so good, and it's getting to the point where I'm like quoting Coach more than Styles even, I think, and it's it's amazing. And the next one was actually, it was kind of a toss-up. I'll mention two very quickly, because our two new betas, both really cool and sassy, which is Isaac and Boyd. The first one was actually when we first meet Boyd and he's sitting at the table and Styles goes and, you know, is buying, you know, or renting the keys to his workplace, the ice skating rink, off him. And Styles is trying to talk him down about the money and, you know, so he's like, oh, I you know, distinctly remember the twist sound of 20. And he's like, oh, really? Because I said 50. You know, it starts with a f sound. You know, if you don't remember that, I could demonstrate some other words that start with the f sound for you. And it was just, I really like when shows that are, like, not explicitly rated manage to make references to things being kind of, because kids that age would swear, but you don't show that on a TV, you know, you don't show that on a TV show. And I really like when things manage to get away around that, if you know what I mean, because
yeah.
they do it in Harry Potter, which I was, like, shocked the hell out of me. Like, in one of the later books of Harry Potter, Harry's getting a whole bunch of owls sent in because of a big drama when he has to have the court case at the ministry. And Vernon is, like, screaming around the kitchen and he yells, like, in the text, it says, like, enough effing owls, like, spelt out E-F-F-I-N-G. And I'm like, yeah. I can't believe you got away with that in Harry Potter, but I really appreciate that you did, if you know what I mean. And yeah. This reminded me of that. And the other one was just Isaac at the end when Derek is, you know, telling Scott to ask the others how they feel about it and Isaac about becoming a werewolf, and Isaac's kind of like, I'm a little bummed about being a fugitive, but other than that I'm great. And it's just so casual and funny, and Isaac is very snarky. I mean, they're all very snarky once they become werewolves, it seems to be a character trait, but but yeah, I really liked that bit.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines was from Coach too, and it's right after Allison pushes him off the rock climbing wall and he falls right to the mat. And Coach just sort of sits down next to him and says, McCall, I don't know why, but your pain gives me a special kind of joy.
Yeah.
And yeah, again, with the delivery and everything, it's just perfect.
He's
love Coach.
Wonderful.
Yeah. the other one that I really liked is actually from Melissa, Scott's mom, and this is when Erica is in the hospital after she has her seizure, and she's kind of bumming, and she's like, you know, do you have to tell my mom? And Melissa says, there's a team of lawyers in the back that would break my legs if I didn't, and I don't know if you've seen them, but for a girl my age, they're still pretty hot. I just...
Fair enough.
I don't know... Yeah, and I don't know why, but I just... That line has always stuck with me, and I just like the way that, you know, she gets Erica to laugh, even though she's really humiliated and everything, and it's just great.
Yeah, that's totally true. Like, she's very much, she's a good nurse. Like, she is, like, she does her job well. Like, she, you know, manages to sort of comfort and relax people, and it was really cute, yeah. My first point for the episode... We're introduced to the two new betas of Derek, the two new people that end up becoming his betas besides Isaac, which is Boyd and Erica. And I think that we should sort of talk a little bit about each one of them. But Boyd, the first one, I'm really curious as to what his deal is. Like, we see him basically sitting completely alone at the table, and he is, you know, approached by Styles, and he kind of has this, whatever, like, you know, Styles is borrowing his ice skating rink. But he seems to sit alone, and when Scott asks him why he wants to be a werewolf, it's not like Erica or Isaac who have massive trauma. He just seems to be lonely and have no friends, and I don't understand why. Like, what's wrong with him? Like, he's not like... He seems to be some sort of social pariah, and, mm-hmm. you know, it is... He doesn't sit with anyone, but he's, like, really cool and funny, like, the way that he, like, sassed Styles. Like... So it's not like, it's not even like Erica, who, you know, I guess apparently doesn't have friends and is laughed at because of her epilepsy, which is a whole thing I'll get to in a second. But why do you think Boyd is this isolated? Like, I don't understand.
I don't know, because let me tell you, if he went to my high school, I would sit with him at lunch every day.
Yeah, like, he's so cool, and he works at the ice skating rink, and he rides around the little truck, and I don't understand why people didn't like him. And it makes me think, like, oh, did, like, something happen in childhood that he's, like, known as, like, being, like, oh, stay away from that guy, or that he's weird or something because of, like, something that happened in their childhoods or something? Like, I don't understand, like, why he was such a loner. You know, he's the kind of guy that could potentially be a loner because he wants to be, like, he stays out of the way because he either doesn't like people or, you know, feels aloof or separated in some way. But that's not what he wanted. Like, he wanted people to sit with at lunch. So I don't understand what has happened Boyd such a loner.
Yeah, and I wonder if maybe he's just too intimidating for a lot of the people at school, because he's a big guy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a little scary, and he doesn't seem to really smile a whole lot, so he kind of comes off as a little intense.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wonder if, you know, people avoid him because they're intimidated by him, and that's why he's just alone all the time.
That's true. And, I mean, about him as well, I loved the bit at the end after, you know, he watches Scott fight with Erica and Isaac, and then... You know, Scott says to him, like, really, do you want to be like them? And he says to Scott, no, I want to be like you, which is a pretty intense thing to say as well. And I mean, with what ends up happening, we haven't really seen that much more interaction between Boyd and Scott. You know, it seems to be more of like an Isaac and Scott thing. And so I'm wondering if next season, whether Boyd will be, you know, someone like that. Like, he does seem to be, like, very independent, like, compared to Erica and Isaac, who are very much betas. Like, you know, like, they're very much followers and they're very kind of, you know, they're bratty teenagers being looked after by their dad, Derek, and they, you know, sulk when they're told what to do. But Boyd kind of all watches it very calmly and is very, like, chill, and he kind of seems to make his own decisions. And I feel like he would be a really awesome alpha. Like, he would be...
Yeah.
Because he's so calm and grounded. So, yeah, I'm interested in Boyd, and I don't understand why he has no friends.
I know. Yeah, I'm really interested in him, too, especially when it comes to next season, as I hope he'll have a little bit bigger of a role, because you're right, he's very mature compared to the other ones, and he's very serious, and like you said, he sits back and he watches, and I feel like he, out of everyone... His decision to become a werewolf was less out of desperation, you know, to get away from, you know, the epilepsy or to get away from an abusive father, and it was more like a very calculated decision, and I think that's actually going to make him a stronger werewolf, too.
And then what about Erica? What did you think about her?
I like Erica. I don't obviously like her attitude too much, especially in the beginning few episodes that she's featured in, but when she had, you know, her seizure, and I see you have this in the doc too, that, you know, people were laughing at her, and I was just like, really? I mean, who
is this? Something that happens in high school, like, maybe in, like, if you were, like, 7 and you didn't understand or something, people would be like... But, like, high school age students know that this girl has a disability, and when it shows, they're like, ha-ha, let's laugh at her and torture her. Like, is that really something that... I mean, if that happened, like, if any of my our listeners are being like, yeah, that totally happens in my school, like, God, I'm so sorry. That must be, like, a horrible environment. But I cannot imagine anyone... doing that, like any human being doing that, like, it's just bizarre to me. Like, I can't, surely people would be like shocked and nervous and concerned. I don't understand.
Me too. And I can understand why, like, maybe they wouldn't want to be friends with her, or, you know, they would avoid her because they don't understand it, because a lot of people with, like, diseases, especially ones that are, you know, you can physically tell that they have some sort of deformity or something like that, they, you know, people usually avoid them. That I understand, but, like, literally laughing in her face when, you know, she's obviously freaked out and all that, that I just don't understand.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And then something else that interested me is when she did have that fit, when she came back to the, after she, you know, got laughed at for not being able to complete the climbing wall, and then she came back, tried it by herself, and had an epileptic fit, that Scott sensed her fit. And I didn't realize this the first time I watched it. And I'm like, why on earth? Like, she wasn't a werewolf at that time. Like, how did he know? And then I was like, he's a werewolf. He's a canine. They train dogs to be service animals for people with epilepsy because they can sense the seizures before they happen, whether it's a smell or a vibe. I don't know what it is, but there are dogs trained for health reasons, like as service animals, that, you know, instead of like a seeing eye dog, you can have an epilepsy dog that's your companion, and it knows when you're going to have a seizure, and it basically has a way of notifying you and takes you to, like, lie down or whatever. Like, it has a thing where it, yeah, sorry, my roommate knows a lot about service dogs and is miming things at me right now about it. And basically that's a thing that happens, that you can train dogs for epileptics. And I'm like, is that what they've done? Is that why he knew? Because he's got canine senses, and so he could set, like, so he's got heightened senses of what a canine can do, and one of the things a canine can do is pick up on these seizures.
Yes, I that was actually one of the questions that I had, too, like, why was he able to sense it? And I didn't even put two and two together, but that's perfect. Yeah, that's absolutely what it must have been about. And that's really kind of cool, too, I mean, that he's able to do that. Although I will say that scene, like, really, she was going to climb the wall knowing that she has epilepsy without a rope and without anybody around.
And, like, without them, she didn't put the mat down, like, she didn't put anything down. Like, it was like, really, really strange. But then I think that her transformation after she got changed is pretty extreme. Isaac's is as well. I mean, they both turned into kind of like, whoa, step back, we've got a badass on our hands kind of thing. And it's like as soon as they get the bite, like Derek ceremoniously presents them with a leather jacket or something. And but Isaac's kind of like, oh, I'm a slick, cool, arrogant person, which kind of, it falls away pretty easily. But Erica's transformation is like, intense to the point of like, I'm like, you act inappropriately. I don't care that you're pretty. The way that you're acting is not how people act to one another. Like, I don't. Is that what happens to someone who's been so downtrodden and suddenly gets a hit of confidence? Like, it really, you know, it really surprised me. I mean, I guess it's an extreme reaction in the other way, but apparently, when you. These werewolf juices are making everyone so crazy, like, as soon, and Scott didn't really react like that when he was bitten. Like, he had the kind of weird episode where he was influenced enough by the moon to be all horny and make out with Lydia, but aside from that, he didn't really have this, like, ooh, I'm so cool now kind of, like, hopped up confidence thing. So what is that about?
Well, first of all, about Erica, it is a huge step in the other direction for her, but I do kind of understand where she's coming from, because like you said, you know, she'd been downtrodden and just treated like crap and laughed at, and all of a sudden her epilepsy is gone and she's totally transformed, I mean, literally, and I think she just wanted to throw it back in everybody's faces, and she did exactly that, so I can understand why she did that, to prove something to them, but, I mean, obviously it went to her head a little bit too much.
Yeah, it was, like, really, like, she's pretty vicious, like, and it makes me wonder if we're going to see that more with, I mean, so far we've seen in this show that, in general, that the women are, in certain ways, more powerful and more extreme than the men, like, willing to go to more extremes, like, even with Kate, with Allison, like with Lydia, Allison's mother as well, all of these people are kind of almost the most hardcore, like the most ruthless and intense people, and maybe female werewolves are like that as well. Like maybe when we see more female werewolves, they'll be the more dominant in some way, because she's definitely more extreme than the others. And is very, very ruthless. Like her sort of conversation with Styles when she knocks him out with the piece of machinery, not even with her hand, she hits him over the head with a solid lump of metal and he's a human. I was like, whoa, okay. Like, but yeah, I mean, her development is really nice by the end of the season as well. And it is a shame that she's not coming back for season 3, because I actually, like, was looking forward to seeing kind of that all strip away. And, I mean, I guess it is a thing that happens. Like, if you have an extreme change, you go one way really into the extreme before, like, settling into who you really are. Like, without...
Right.
Because she was sort of trapped in one way by, you know, the way people thought of her and her epilepsy and stuff like that. And she was so... You know, she didn't know how much of that was kind of, like, anxiety and how much was her own personality, and now she doesn't know how much of this is her own personality and how much it is, you know, being hopped up on the werewolf, you know, fumes. And it takes, I think, you know, we see with her and with Isaac that it takes them a while to settle into their own personalities and discovering who they are under all of that. And it's sort of a shame that she won't have more of that, because I was actually quite interested in that, because I very much grew to like her by the end.
Yeah, so did I. And as far as, you know, her transformation and then Scott not really changing all that much, I kind of have a theory about that, in the sense that, first of all, he was on his own. I mean, he didn't have Derek to look out for him, to teach him. I mean, he sort of did, but, you know, they weren't getting along too well. And so I think she has less to worry about, because she knows that Derek is going to be there to take care of things. And on the flip side of that, she came from, you know, she had epilepsy and Isaac was from an abusive home. Scott was normal, and I think this might be another reason why Boyd is so normal too. Is because his family life, as far as we can tell, you know, there was nothing too strenuous going on there. I mean, he obviously didn't really like his lot in life, but there was no major storyline there for us to think that, you know, he was abused or neglected or any of that sort of thing. Mm. So that could be why, you know, both Isaac and Erica changed so much, and Scott was relatively normal when he was bitten.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But yeah, it is, it sure is something. They're walking around like they're something from the outsiders. Like, they're like, you know, they're like a bunch of greasers now, and it's like funny. But yeah, what did you think of Derek in this episode, like with his interactions with them and with Scott? Because this is the only episode that I've genuinely disliked Derek the whole way through.
I was going to say the same thing, actually, because he's very arrogant in this episode. And I feel like he's trying to put logic to what he's doing when there's no logic there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's trying to back up his actions, but like, they don't make sense. Like,
yeah,
he's not making very good decisions. And yeah, he's just sort of frustrating this whole episode.
Yeah, and it's like I want to smack it off his face. Like, he's so arrogant and dismissive, and it's just like,
yeah.
And the end of the last episode, like, he had the whole trouble with Isaac and Scott, and he was ashamed. Like, Scott was like, you did that, and Derek's like, I know. And then he went and made two more, like, unstable teenagers. Like, I don't understand. Yeah, but he very much, like, when he was kind of confronting Scott, he's trying so hard to be, like, not a bad guy, but, like, a badass kind of slick, cool thing, and it's, like, it doesn't work for you, it really doesn't. And yeah, it was just, like, he had no redeeming moment in this. Like, the whole, when he stole Erica's hospital bed as well, I'm like, this is probably not the moment for this. And it's, like, I know you're a werewolf, Derek. And I know that you're really, really, really juju'd up right now because you've got betas. the betas are probably, like, feeding into his power, like, primally, like, outside of his control. But he's still, and again, like, I keep saying these things, but he's not outside the law. Like, he's not a fugitive, like, at the moment. He's a legitimate citizen of the United States of America. Just because he's a werewolf doesn't make him not a person. And I don't understand why he keeps doing these things that are, like, unacceptable, like stealing a girl's hospital bed. Like, why can't you just do things properly despite being a werewolf? I don't understand. Like, it really annoys me. And in that bit as well, he kind of was weirdly creepy and predatory with her, like, physically as well, in a way that I was not that comfortable with. And then
I know. He was, like, stroking her ankles and stuff, and I was like, okay, this is just kind of weird.
Yeah, it's not the greatest, not the highlight of my Derek fan life, I'm gonna say. Okay, I want to know what No Shirtless Styles is all about.
Okay, so I didn't catch this the first time I watched it, but on the next couple of rewatches, I noticed that in the locker scene, Styles takes his shirt off right when Scott opens his locker door, so you don't see anything. And to me, this is just really funny. And I know, like, fans are, like, dying to see shirtless Styles, and that's a whole big thing. But, like, it's so funny to me that all the other guys, you know, have their shirts off half the time in the episode anyway.
Mm.
And then Styles, you know, he's getting undressed behind the locker, and then as soon as it closes up, you know, his shirt's on and everything.
Yeah.
And it was just something small that I picked up, but it just makes me laugh every time I see it.
No, I had not noticed that, but that's interesting. And I mean, I know I've seen there was an interview Dylan did, like, ages ago, where he said, like, that Styles will never take off his shirt, he'll never kiss a girl, and there was something else that he wouldn't do. And I don't know if those will all hold up true. Like, I think that they're not going to be able to get away too long without Styles kissing someone. But
yeah.
I think that the no taking off the shirt thing also ties into, like, the hair thing and everything, in that this character was not meant to be the cute character, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, whether people like him or not, he was not meant to be that, and that's didn't how they, either Dylan or the showrunners, didn't want to sort of portray him like that. And that's quite interesting to me that, you know, that they'd go on with that. But we'll have to see next season since, because there's been a really big, like, since the end of season two, there's been a really big kind of sway over to, like, Styles is, Dylan is the heartthrob. Like, maybe it's because, like, some of the fans are young and, like, Hecklin looks a bit old for them or something. But even though he's actually not that old, he just looks, like, way older than he is.
How old is he?
He's younger than me. He's, like, 24. And he does not look 24. He looks like 30.
Yeah, he does.
and Dylan's like 21 or 22 now. So they're not that different in ages, but, you know, he's the kind of the teen heartthrob one now. And so we'll see if they kind of pander to that in the next season or whether they will let him keep his shirt on.
I think it would be really funny to see him, like, have his shirt off, but we don't get to see it, you know, like sort of like they did with the locker door, like, you know, it's coming, but the camera, like, you know, turns away or something. And then I just think I really like seeing frustrated fandom, but that's a whole nother problem. But I think that would be really funny if they kept doing things like that.
Yeah, I think that they will probably end up doing something like that, because I really don't see them switching over to, like, Styles the heartthrob that walks around with his shirt off as a, you know, as a regular thing.
Yeah. So I had another just little thing in here. This was when Lydia was hallucinating and saw Peter walking around the high school, and he goes up to a trophy case and walks away, and she goes to see what the trophy is, and I'm pretty sure it said Peter Hale, captain, right?
Mm.
And then, so I was just curious what he was captain of, and I was thinking maybe it was the basketball team, since he said, you know,
yeah,
I forget which episode, but that, you know, basketball was a real sport and that sort of thing.
It is basketball, and I could say more, but I don't know how much we're intending to spoil people.
Is this later on in the season?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'll say this and I'll edit it out. Anyway, so we've just had our little spoiler talk behind the scenes, and yes, he was captain of the basketball team. I think the top of the trophy panned down, and I think it was basketball, but from the implication and from, like, you do see the trophy cabinet again, and it is basketball, so...
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I forgot about that, but I just kind of like it because I feel like it's a throwback to the movie,
I think it definitely is. Like, I think those basketball references definitely are, so, yeah, I like that as well. One other thing... Oh my god, Chris Argent and Allison and the kidnapping and all of that. If my father did that to me, I don't think I would ever talk to him again. It was insane. Like, but the... And she kind of is very... She puts up with a lot, Allison. Like, but Chris's speech about, like, the men and women in her family, you know, in their family, that, you know, she said, you know, he said, oh, it wasn't my decision. And he says that the men and women in the family have a progressive hierarchy, that the women are the leaders, like the men are the kind of, the men are just the soldiers and the women are the leaders, the decision makers, because of the unnecessary war and violence caused by men's decision making in the past. That makes me wonder, first of all, again about his mother, where she is and who she was, like what was her leader, what was her role in the hunters group, and you know, because at the moment we're seeing sort of Gerard as the head of the family, and, you know, I don't think Kate outranked Gerard while she was alive, but apparently if the women are leaders, like, who is the head of the family, if you know what I mean? And if, you know, if that's what they're training Allison to want to be. And also, you know, they say in our family we have this tradition, is it just their family and not other hunter packs, or... Given that the Argents are the ones in the legend, like, that Allison discovers last season, that her family, like, you know, the name means silver, that they were the ones that originated the werewolf hunting, are they the only family, or the main family, and that the outsiders come in and join them, but that it's always the Argents that runs the entire hunting thing?
Yeah, I picked up on that whole thing about it being her family too, and I was wondering sort of the same thing. I have a hard time thinking that they're the only hunter family, especially as, you know, if this was hundreds of years ago, think of how many generations and you know, they were split up and they're all across the world now. But it is sort of interesting to think that people join their family either maybe through marriage or maybe just as a, okay, you're a hunter now, you're part of our family, with that sort of thing. But yeah, I was curious about that too, that it's her family, and it makes me wonder just, you know, where that came from. And two, you were mentioning her grandmother, but I was also thinking Victoria, like, could she be the decision maker, the head of the family now? But at the same time, like, she doesn't really have a huge role. You don't see her making the decisions, so I'm not sure about that.
I'm confused about it as well, honestly. Like, because I think you do see a little bit, but I'm just still so curious about how people come in to this, and, like, and I can't imagine them being the, like, I would have thought they were one of many as well, except for that they were apparently the ones in the legend who started it all, like, whether they are kind of an overarching, like, that literally everyone in their family goes off and makes their own little hunter family, and maybe it's spread that far, but that it all comes back to them being, like, the, you know, the power source, or, like, the people who make the hunter rules. And I don't know if we're going to get more of that, but it does confuse me. And, you know, whether there are other hunter families out there that don't have women as leaders, or however it all works. You know, you'd think that Victoria would be the head of everything. That's what they want to train Alison to be. But, yeah, I'm a little bit confused about it at this point.
Especially since Gerard seems to be making all the decisions.
Yeah, that's
he's
the thing.
One that, like, basically declared war.
Yeah. I'm like, if this is allegedly the truth, then Gerard shouldn't be the head of the family. Like, I don't understand how that's meant to work. Or maybe, you know, Chris doesn't want it to be that way, and that's why he's trying to train Alison. But yeah, that confused me. Okay, so what about the ice skating date as well?
Okay, I had a little something about this, and it was the part where Stiles and Lydia are putting on their skates, and, you know, they have that funny little back and forth about how, you know, orange doesn't go with blue, and it's the color of the Mets, and, you know, that sort of thing. And then Stiles says, you know, two things that people might not think go well together might actually do. And Lydia was like, yeah, you're right. Alison and Scott really look cute together. And Stiles just sort of goes, ugh, you know, I mean, that's not what I was talking about. And I was wondering if you thought she was really oblivious to what Stiles was saying, or if she was deflecting, and if she was, why do you think she was doing that?
I think that she probably was deflecting. I don't think that she would be oblivious to how Stiles feels about her at the moment. Like, we've seen enough. She knows. Like, she knows how he feels about her. And I think that she just doesn't feel like that she can reciprocate, and so pretends it isn't happening, if you know what I mean. Like, the dance in the last season, like, I mean, they're getting closer. It used to be the point where, you know, she was like, who are you talking? And now she kind of comes over and sits with them, like, without Jackson. Like, she is their friend, and she has agreed to go, even if it's as friends. Like, he organized a date and took her on a date, and she agreed to it, if you know what I mean. Or a, you know, a fun outing, at least. And, I think that she knows that Stiles is pretty intense about her, and that she's pretty intense about Jackson, and that she's, you know, I mean, it's kind of nice in a way. I mean, she's not being, you know, she's not being a bitch to him about it or anything, but I do not think there's any possible way that she doesn't know how he feels about her, and I don't think he's been really shy about it either.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, if Stiles organized a private ice skating date for me, I would be, like, all over that, though. So, you know, it was a very cute date until she sort of started going crazy. I also liked Scott's utter failure at skating. And him and Alison, yeah, like, are weirdly competitive in, like, a cute way, like, with the climbing wall,
yeah,
and with this. And it's kind of, there's no, like, it's kind of, it's not like, oh, you're a girl and I need to protect you, or I'm better at you than this. Like, he does say, oh, I'll be fine because I, you know, I have all these super strengths, and then he still fails, and it's all very funny. But I like their kind of little competitiveness with the rock climbing. And here, though, I really wish Alison had worn pants to go ice skating. I was looking at her outfit going, you need pants or something. Even Lydia's got full length black leggings on, and you're wearing, like, a very short skirt and some, like, fishnet tights. This is a bit silly, but oh well. I'm like, you're wearing gloves but no pants. Next time, if you want to keep warm, try pants. But anyway, so yeah, I liked that whole thing in general.
I liked the picture taking session too. I thought that was really cute. And the thing I really like about I mean, it's basically Tyler and Crystal, is that they're so natural together that it's not, like, I really believe in that relationship. Yeah. A lot of the time you see, you know, two people together, and it's just so full of tension and suspense, and they're just so natural together that I just really like it, and I really like the photographs, and when his eyes ruined all the pictures.
Yeah. I thought that. And it's cool that they both know about it now, like that Allison mm-hmm. knows, and that they can be really open about it, if you know what I mean. That it seems like that they've, you know, they've gone through this thing of you know, him being honest and her, just, and it's really actually like, I mean, of course, honesty helps a relationship, but it's kind of really, it seems like they're just so, they're on like a level of happiness because they're being honest with each other, and it's really cute and nice.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Lydia, though, we also see the bit where, you know, after they their chemistry class or whatever, and Jackson is learning about immunity, that he pretty much attacks Lydia, you know, at least attacks her verbally about, you know, her being immune to whatever was happening, and, you know, her immunity affecting him in some way, like infecting him with the ability not to be a werewolf or whatever, and that was really harsh and scary,
yeah.
that whole bit. And then you see the bit after, like, he yells at her, and then he kind of leaves, and then he sees her upset, and he kind of looks back and is like, he looks upset that he's upset her, and then he kind of shakes it off, like, can't be worried about that. Like he's not letting himself be emotional, if you know what I mean? And that whole thing is very strange to me as well, that he's so, like, focused on this werewolf thing that he is, like, purposely trying to make himself not care about Lydia.
Yeah, I definitely picked up on that, too. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm sort of wondering if... I mean, I know that he dumped her, but I'm sort of wondering if it ever came to the point where, like, he became a werewolf and he got settled and he was, like, he knew how to control himself and all that. Would he try to get Lydia back? I mean, he's always trying to get the best of everything, to be the best at everything. So you would think that, seeing as Lydia is pretty much the most popular girl in school, you know, once things settled down with the whole werewolf thing, do you think he would try to get Lydia back? I mean, he obviously still cares about her.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was the first sort of showing that he was kind of, or even, like, not himself. Like, I wrote it down as, like, it kind of seemed like roid rage, and I'm wondering if this, like, anger and obsession over getting this werewolf thing is actually something out of his control, and that he... I don't know if it's that or not, or if it's just sort of two sides to his personality, but he definitely obviously does still care about her, and that's sort of the overreaching plot of this season, and then, you know, was going to be the plot of next season, and then Colton broke up with us. so, yeah, so basically the answer is that we'll never know because Colton dumped us, and so we don't know about what he would do after he is settled into himself with Lydia, because he's no longer an option, which is sad. But yeah, I think that by the end of this season, it was definitely clear that they were kind of two, I hesitate to say horrible people, but I'm just going to, like, say it as an exaggeration, but they were two horrible people who act horribly to the world, but who genuinely were in love with each other. And that, you know, when you are kind of acting like a horrible person, you know, it could be hard to actually work out your real feelings. And, yeah, I think that this is sort of the start of him doing that, but he's definitely pushing it aside a lot.
So my last point is about Scott and his heroism in this episode. And the line that really got me, I mean, there was that really funny line between, you know, him and Styles, but the line that really got me was when he said, you know, this thing is going to get out of control. That makes me responsible. And I was just sort of like, he's either really brave or really stupid, or maybe...
Yeah, I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive at all.
I think, yeah, he definitely encompasses both of them, but it really makes me like Scott a lot because, I mean, he does sort of have this hero complex, but I think that it's a very responsible thing for him to do because even though he's still struggling with being a werewolf himself, he honestly tries to take the other people under his wing and make them realize that, well, for one, they're not making the best decision trying to be werewolves, but, you know, that he's trying to protect them, even though he really doesn't have any sort of relationship with them. They're not really his friends at all, especially at this point. And yet, you know, he still feels that he's responsible for them.
Yeah, I mean, that bit did interest me where he was like, I'm responsible. It's like, he's technically not. Like, he feels like he is because he has the power and the knowledge and is in on it, and so he thinks that he's responsible to say something. But it's not like he's actually... It's not like his... It's not responsible in the sense that it's not like his fault or anything like that. So it is really interesting that he feels like he owes it to them to take responsibility, to sort of be the angel on the shoulder as opposed to Derek's devil on the shoulder or whatever about being a werewolf. And, yeah, I mean, it is very good of him. And obviously, you know, he doesn't want to let other people become werewolves, especially with all of the danger. But I wonder if it's ever going to get to the point where he is, like, accepting of werewolves, if you know what I mean, that he is never... Obviously, he's accepted that he's a werewolf by this point, but... If you know what I mean, that he's going to stop seeing it as such a negative thing, and like that, you know, if he could change back and then choose not to or something like that, if you know what I mean?
Right. I wonder if maybe that'll come more into play in season three when there are less threats. I mean, by the end of season two, he's got a pretty good relationship with Chris. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we know what's going to happen to Chris and Allison come season three. And the threat for season three is obviously going to be a bunch of other werewolves. So I think that, yeah, you're right. He's going to keep accepting it and accepting that there is a difference between different types of werewolves, just like between two different types of people. And once things calm down a bit more, that maybe he will be more understanding to it.
Yeah, and I mean, I wonder if we'd ever see the point where he'd encourage someone to be becoming a werewolf, not just for a whimsical reason, but like either for protection or for like to save them, like maybe if it like heals everything in their body, that, you know, if there's someone that is dying or hurt so badly that, you know, say Styles like fell down and broke his back and he wasn't going to recover, if you know what I mean, that mm-hmm. whether he would be like, oh, we'll werewolf you to save you, if you know what I mean. That could be, you know, I don't know if we'll ever see the, you know, point where Scott is actually wanting to turn someone for whatever reason. So the second episode, Abomination, picks up directly where this one, Ice Pick, ends, where Deaton finally reveals some information to Scott about his involvement in the werewolf world. And he helps clean Scott's wound from Derek, which doesn't heal as fast because it was inflicted by an alpha. He tells Scott that he doesn't know what that creature was that wounded the dead hunter that's on his table, but that the Argents may know, that they'll have some record of the various creatures that they've hunted throughout. Scott hides when the Argents come back for their dead guy, and Deaton reluctantly tells Gerard everything he can assess about the attack, that the creature had a paralyzing venom and then that kills once the victim's paralyzed. We see this happening when Styles goes to a mechanic's to get his Jeep, and while he waits and watches the mechanic work, he finds some sticky stuff on the door handle, which turns out to be that venom. He is incapacitated from touching it, but he sees the creature attack the mechanic, purposely paralyzing him, then dropping the elevated car onto him. He manages to dial 911 and is questioned by the police, actually by his father, about the incident, and his dad suspects that there are things that Styles is not saying and encourages him to talk about it, but Styles swears that he just found the man dead. Allison and Scott continue to meet secretly, and as she heads out to find him, she's stopped by Gerard, who quite aggressively lectures her about trust and the bonds of family. He makes Allison swear that she can be trusted, and though her answer seems like a pretty convincing lie, and his questioning of her causes her to miss Scott, who leaves a message for her where they were meant to meet in the woods. Scott goes to pick up Styles from the crime scene, and Styles, who seems quite troubled, tells Scott about the lizard creature. Most importantly, that he'd seem to recognize it in some way, like seeing a friend through a Halloween mask, he says. Derek, meanwhile, is aggressively training his three new betas, and his anger at them actually seems to be misdirected anger about the lizard thing, and he seems quite panicked about it and says they need to know everything he knows as fast as he can teach them in order to defend themselves. Lydia's mother wakes her up for the therapy session that she has to have, and the two of them, very shocked, discover that in her sleep, Lydia seems to have punched out her mirror, covering her hand and sheets with blood under the comforter. While she waits for the counsellor, a cute alternative guy compliments the gloves she's wearing to cover her wound, and though she snaps at him, he continues to flirt with her, which has her a bit curious as she goes into the therapist's office. The school counsellor, who's called Miss Morel, is also their French teacher, and Lydia questions her ability as a therapist till Morel kind of matches her wit for wit and fact for fact about her master's degree, and they get into the session. In the discussion, Lydia finds herself quoting something Peter had said in a prior episode and doesn't seem to quite know where the statement had come from. Styles is running between Allison and Scott, exchanging messages because the two of them can't be seen together at school now that Gerard works there. And the three of them establish that Gerard has been seen with an old book that could very well be the bestiary, the collection of creatures and hunting records that Deaton had mentioned. They make a plan to look for it during the lacrosse game that's happening that night. Meanwhile, Jackson asks Danny to help him brighten the footage he had taken of himself sleeping, and when Danny calls in Matt to help, the two show Jackson how the footage has been edited, that there has been a split which removed 2 hours of whatever was on the tape. During the game, a violent player from another team injures some of the Beacon Hills players, and coach recruits Boyd onto the team on the spot. From the crowds. Boyd is happy to play, but Scott keeps trying to get rid of him due to Gerard's presence and fearing that Boyd will give himself away. Boyd plays successfully, but does start to lose control, and he ends up injuring Scott. The entire crowd thinks Scott's leg is broken, and actually is, but by the time he gets to them, it's healed, and he plays it off like he was just stunned by being thrown down. Gerard invites Scott to dinner with the Argent, and it's another very special, awkward Argent meal, where seemingly everyone but Gerard is uncomfortable and terrified because they know Scott's a werewolf, while Gerard good-naturedly quizzes Scott about his past with Allison. Allison and Scott manage to excuse themselves and sneak off to keep looking for the bestiary and find the book Allison had thought was the one. It's actually a family recipe cookbook. Allison realizes that she knows where the actual bestiary may be on the USB key on Gerard's keychain, and Scott excuses himself from the house. While all of this is going on, Styles, who is directed by Allison, goes to look for the bestiary in Gerard's school office. Styles finds Lydia crying in her car and tries to stop and comfort her, promising her that he'll return to speak to her about everything because she thinks she's going crazy, and he promises her that she's not. After he can't find the bestiary, he tries to go back to Lydia but is confronted in the gym by Derek and Erica about what he knows in regards to the lizard creature. As he describes it, the creature actually shows up. Erica's knocked out of the way, but Derek is paralyzed by the thing and falls into the swimming pool. Styles jumps in to save him and holds his head above water for hours until Scott comes from the Argents and saves them both from the creature. Derek realizes that he knows what it is, a Canima, a shapeshifter which has had something go wrong with it, and it's something he's heard legends about. He and Scott argue about whether they should bring the Argents in on the information. Finally, when Scott goes to pick up his mum from the hospital, he's confronted by Gerard, who stabs him straight in the gut, revealing that he knows what Scott is and that his friendly persona had been an act. He commands that Scott has to do something for him, or that Gerard will put the knife into Scott's mother instead. The end. So, what were your favourite quotes from this episode, Abomination?
My first one is from Deaton the Vet, and this one, he just was talking with Gerard and the other hunters, and he said, "Killers come in all ages," and he looked right at Gerard, and I just loved that line. I loved the way that he looked at Gerard, and you just knew he didn't like what he was doing, he didn't agree with it, he didn't want to help, but obviously they weren't really giving him much choice,
yeah.
And it just... it sets you up really well for the rest of the season, I'll just say that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And yeah, Deaton is like a magical guru. Like, he's so, he's so like astute, and he's so mysterious, and it's all...
Yeah,
he's really cool, and it's... yeah, I'm very curious about him in general, but God, he must really hate Gerard.
I know, really.
Like, he's so... like, yeah. It's so thinly veiled, but he's so calm all of the time, but he must want to, like... hurt all of those people so much.
And then my other line was from Styles, and this was when they were talking on the step, and when Styles was relaying the message from Allison, and he just, they were talking about, oh, they were talking about the bestiary, and then Scott was like, why don't I know any of this stuff? And he was kind of frustrated, and Styles says, you're my best friend, you're a creature of the night, it's a priority of mine. And I just, you know, I kind of imagine him staying up into all hours of the morning, like, you know, going to Google and typing in all this really strange stuff to find all this lore so he knows how to help his best friend. And man, that's just dedication.
Yeah, I totally see that as well. I'm not going to lie, I have another one from Coach this episode, which was just... Actually, I have two that I want to say from Coach, but I can't do that many Coach ones. But he... It's just so ridiculous. When he recruits Boyd on to the field and Boyd starts playing... Because Boyd is not in the lacrosse team, he's just an audience member. And he's like, oh, that's a big guy, he can come and play for us. And when Boyd ends up successfully, like, tackling a player, Coach is like, yeah, the bigger they are, the bigger they are. And it was just, I don't even know what that is. It's just like, clearly he didn't know where he was going with that statement. And it was so funny. Like, I, yeah, loved it. And I also just loved the Coach bit where he was like, where Danny was hurt, and he was like, how many fingers am I holding up? And Danny's like, four. And he's like, say two. It's like, he's terrible. Like
two?
Yeah, sometimes teachers are terrible and you, like, hate them and want them. Like, it's like, how did this person even get their job, if you know what I mean? But Coach is terrible in a way that I just adore. And, I mean, I loved the whole interaction, the Styles, Scott, Allison running across the school to be going back and forth, and how Styles is like, you know, drug dealers have been using disposable cell phones, you know, pretty well for years now. But I actually, the bit that I really, really liked is after they, Scott and Allison sneak off inside her house to break into the office, and they end up opening the safe. I guess due to, I know that with twist safes you can listen to the clicks, and I guess Scott's hearing helped them open the safe, and Allison's just kind of like, do you want to hit a few banks later? And I was like, oh, you're awesome. I love loving Allison, because so many shows where it's like a lead guy who's got a troubled problem, the girlfriend is annoying and you don't want her, like, it's just like, oh, and there's, you know, another girl who might be cooler or something or whatever. And in this, as I've said before, I like that Allison and Scott are an established couple, and that Allison is cool on her own, if you know what I mean. I she's really well developed. She's not, oh, the guy's girlfriend kind of thing who has to put up with this. She's really cool as she is, and I really appreciate her.
I love that part, though, where Styles is running back and forth between the two, and, like, when he collapses against the lockers and he's choking, and then he goes and he, like, where did he even get that inhaler from? Was it, like, Scott's old inhaler or something? And, oh, that was just great.
As far as that kind of actually takes us into, as far as the Scott and Allison, like, non-communication goes, obviously it's sort of amped up a bit now because Gerard's in the school. It's like that they're being watched at school. And I really liked the bit where they were talking in the cafeteria, like, back-to-back, if you know what I mean. That bit I found really cool, and, like, that Allison had seen Erica sort of coming on to Scott, and that Scott was obviously worried that Allison would be upset, and that they're sort of sitting there talking and, you know, very blank-faced, and Allison being like, I know what that was. She's with Derek now, and blah, blah, blah. And it's just really cool. Again, Allison, so smart, and, like, she doesn't make the wrong assumptions, and she's really cool, and just that way of them talking to each other like that was really, really fascinating and really well done, I thought. So I really liked that scene.
Yeah, I like the fact that the problems in their relationship, or the thing that causes conflict for the pair, isn't in their relationship. They're all outside forces. It's their family. It's the whole werewolf thing. It's not like, you know, she doesn't think she's good enough because he's basically, you know, a superhero type person or anything like that. It's all outside conflict, and that sort of thing is just really refreshing.
Yeah, like, it's not like, oh, we're so bad together, but we love each other and we argue and blah, blah, blah. Now that she knows about Scott, it's like, now that they're really open with each other, it really is like, you can see how good they are as a couple and as human beings, and yes, their problems are external. So while I'm not a huge fan of, like, oh, people who are meant to be and the greatest romance of all time, I think that Scott and Allison genuinely, you know, could be, you know, true love kind of thing, like, once the external factors are sorted out.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it is very different to other shows where, oh, we fight, oh, we cheated on each other, and we still love each other, and, oh, shut up, kind of thing, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely liked that, and as I've said, I keep being so overwhelmed with kind of, like, yes, now that she knows now and how she works with them. Like, her and Styles as well are, like, an amazing team of, like, the way they work together, sort of, not behind Scott's back, but they work together to support Scott. I really, really love that.
So my first point here is just about the bestiary, and basically when Scott says, you know, how many different things are there? And I know we sort of talked about this before, but I just wanted to bring it up again because this is the episode where we get that information, and it definitely makes me curious about, well, first of all, the bestiary is all in Latin, so, I mean, obviously it's very old, and I just wonder, you know, where do all of these mythological creatures come from? You know, is it something that they add to over the years, or is it, you know, they're not discovering any new creatures, this is just something that's passed down from generation to generation? And then, of course, you know, what else could possibly be in the book?
I've still tried to work that out about, like, what creatures exist in this world, and we've discussed that before, like, if there might be like a succubus or a siren or, you know, witches or all of the different things that might exist in this world. But my question that brought up as well was in regards to the Kanema, whether, I mean, I know that we see a sort of vague picture of it later on, but, okay, in this episode, we discover the Kanema is called the Kanema, and Derek only recognizes it as the Kanema when he sees its actions, when he sees it not, like, trying to look at itself in the mirror and work out what it is, and that he says it's a shapeshifter like us, but gone wrong. And so my question is, like, is the Kanema, so is it, like, if it's, like, a werewolf gone wrong, is the Kanema something that always looks like a lizard, or is it kind of like a negative idea of, like, a Patronus, if you know what I mean? Like, if someone gets bitten by a werewolf and there's something wrong with it, if they have a different kind of form, or whether it always looks like a giant lizard, or whether it's just that this person looks like a giant lizard, if you know what I mean? Because Derek has heard of Kanemas but doesn't recognize this thing as a Kanema. So that's my question, whether Kanema is the permanent image of what we have in the show, or whether Kanema is a concept that happens to a person and it could look different from person to person.
That is an awesome theory, actually. That would be really cool. And it would sort of make sense if Derek only heard about the legend, like, orally, and not necessarily had something like the bestiary or, you know, whatever to be passed down to him. So that could explain that. And also, you know, Jackson, I forget exactly which episode it's in, but when they're testing Jackson, he basically calls him a snake. So it would make sense that if Jackson's personality is very devious, very snake-like, that he would, you know, is that a spoiler?
I don't know. I can't remember. Jackson's the Kanema. I don't know if anyone's listening to this who hasn't seen the show. And we, you know, I don't know whether we've gotten to the point now, like, whether we've been avoided that. I'm pretty sure we talked about it in the first episode and stuff. But, yeah, whatever. Jackson's the Kanema.
Okay. All right, yeah. So
sorry.
Snake-like. We'll put that in the show notes just in case. But he's very snake-like, so it would make sense that maybe his particular form of the Kanema would be this lizard creature. However, if you remember closer to the end of the season, Peter did look up the Kanema and did look up, like, the next stage, how it evolves and it grows wings or whatever. So that makes me wonder if maybe, but I still really like your theory. Like, I don't want to,
you know. I'd forgotten
about
that. So yeah, because even when we see the picture of it in the bestiary, it kind of doesn't necessarily look like a snake thing. It kind of just looks black. Like, it's weird. Like,
yeah.
So I'm curious about that. Like, and I'm curious as to why Derek didn't know what it was till he saw its behavior as opposed to its looks. But yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait and see, I guess, but that was just something I came up with because of what Derek said, whether about whether Kanemas always look the same. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I don't know if we're going to see much about the Kanema in the future, like after this season or something. But I was just wondering if it's like, if they happen only of their own accord, you know, if they happen only because it's someone who's gotten bitten and who's meant to be turning into another kind of shapeshifter, like a werewolf, or if people just become Kanema without getting the werewolf bite, because obviously Jackson got bitten and it didn't work out for him. So, yeah, I'm not 100% sure about that, but yeah, I'm really, really curious about it. Okay, so I've got a bit of a moral question for you. Gerard's interrogation of Allison when he pulls her aside and, you know, is all like, it's sort of half a threat, like it's kind of like, I know that, obviously he doesn't necessarily know about Scott at this point, he might suspect, but he knows about Lydia and Isaac, and he knows that, obviously from Chris, that Allison helped Isaac get out of the prison because, you know, they had that in the last episode with her arrow. And he basically makes her swear to, you know, give her trust to the family above anything else. And, you know, I think that she lied when she said to him, yes, you can trust me, because you continue to see her go behind his back. But, like, do you believe that, like, family above all else is the most important thing, like, just because you're related? Like, even when it comes to something like defending, like, you know, Kate Argent's actions or something like that? So what do you think of Gerard's, you know, family theories?
I mean, personally, no, I don't think that, but I think Gerard thinks that, which just proves how crazy he really is. If he's willing to say, okay, Kate may have done something wrong, but she's family, and
so we're going to defend it anyway.
Yeah, that's just nuts. I mean, I like that Allison. I mean, maybe she's just a little naive or something, and I think it is important that she be honest with her family, even though they're not making it very easy for her. Mm-hmm. But if you're caught between what your family wants you to do and what you feel is right, I'm glad that she's doing what she feels is right. You know what I mean? Like, even if that means going behind her father's back, even if it means going behind Gerard's back, I think that's the correct thing for her to do. So I'm happy to see that she's doing it.
Yeah, I also very much, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, but it's family, you know, like, oh, you did something terrible, but it's family. I'm like, okay, being related to someone, like sharing their DNA, is not the be all and end all of things. And while I do appreciate family, and there is definitely like a comfortability and trust that comes with being family and sort of being accepted no matter what, it's kind of odd that we have that with people just because we happen to be related to them, as opposed to people that we've like chosen to be around, like friends, if you know what I mean. And so I put those things sort of equally, I'd say. And so, yeah, I think it is good that Allison is kind of not necessarily being like, oh, this is morally decrepit, it's okay, it's family kind of thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's pretty intense that Gerard kind of feels that way as well. And, I mean, I don't even know if that's even true for him. I mean, in one way it might be, but in another way it might be something that he's even saying as an excuse to try and guilt Allison, because it turns out at the end, not to give too major a spoiler, but that Gerard has extremely selfish motives, that he definitely betrays his family to get his selfish motives. So it could have been something that he was saying that, you know, for appearances is the most important, but that he was trying to sort of cause Allison, like, you know, guilt or something, because, oh, Gerard is, like, the worst. He's, like, the worst character ever. Like, oh, I hate him.
And it's funny, because when we first see Gerard, when we're first introduced to him, and even up until basically the end of the last episode of this season, you sort of see him as this very vengeful sort of character, but I'm realizing more and more that he's a lot more manipulative than I ever thought he was. And this was a question I actually had for you about this scene with the cookbook, was, do you think he purposely dropped the cookbook to trick Allison as a sort of test to see if she would go after it, to see where her loyalties did lie?
Possibly. I don't know, because I don't know if, you know, did he, I don't know what he knew that Allison knew at that point, in the sense that, like, did he know that Allison was looking for, you know, the bestiary, but I guess, like, just saying, ooh, can't ever be without that kind of thing could definitely be a test of, you know, oh, am I going to go snoop at what that is if it's so important kind of thing. I haven't really thought about that. I think it could go either way, but yeah, I mean, it definitely would be a good ruse if that was the case, though he does seem to enjoy his dessert. Speaking of dessert, oh my god, the way that, like, that in that dinner, the confrontation that Chris and Scott had in the kitchen, and then they kind of both, like, back away from each other and really angrily grab the dessert plates. It's amazing. Yeah. So funny. But yeah.
You know, I really liked how Scott sassed Chris right there, where he was like, I wonder what would happen to you if Gerard found out. You know, I mean,
like, if
I don't
found
think
out
it's
that
very...
Chris had been protecting Scott. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's very smart for Scott to do that, but I'm kind of glad that, you know, he put Chris on the spot and said, look, I know you're sort of looking out for me, so I know you're not, you know, all that bad.
Yeah. Chris and Scott's relationship fascinates me. It just, I love it, and it's just, it's just really interesting to me. So what else have we got here? What else happened in this episode? A couple of little things. First of all, in the training scene where Derek is training Erica, Isaac, and Boyd to, you know, the fight and defend themselves and stuff, and he, you know, is getting angry that they're all being not very good and predictable, and then Erica tries to be unpredictable by leaping onto him and kissing him in order to distract him, I guess. He, number one, I think it's the only time we see Derek kiss anyone ever.
Yeah.
Which I think will change in season three, but... he throws her off and is like, you're not doing that again. And she says, why? Because I'm a beta, which is interesting. Like, that's an interesting pack dynamic question, like whether alphas need a person of a certain status to be their partner. Which, I mean, would it be like a double alpha pack, like two alphas in the pack? Or would it be, you know, you'd presume not. You'd presume it'd just be like a beta, like a second-in-command beta.
Well, I don't know, because in regular wolf packs, I'm pretty sure there's female alphas and then male alphas, like they're mated pair, and they're just like
true.
The two alphas,
perhaps
which
we'll
that would actually
that.
Be interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually something I've never seen discussed in Teen Wolf fandom, whether it's like an alpha male and alpha female. But as well, more importantly, Derek throws her off and says, no, I have someone else in mind for you, as in he's... You know, apparently he, as the alpha, you know, pairs up all his little betas to get more wolf babies, and is going to, he's going to set up an arranged marriage with her or something, you know, for her or something, which is lovely and normal. But thing is, Erica's not coming back, and this is never followed up on. So who do you think he meant?
Well, I think he meant Styles, because of she sort of went after him a little bit and talk to him a bit more, and I think Derek knows that Styles knows a lot. I think he realizes how smart Styles is, so I sort of always assumed that he meant Styles, and that was where I feel
that he would want to bring Styles into the pack by mating him with Erica.
Well, I think it was more like a distraction. I'm not sure that it was supposed to be like a romantic or sexual thing, but sort of like she needs to focus on somebody else.
I totally always took it as like, no, you can't have the hots for me because I am going to pair you with someone. That's how I always took it, but I might be totally wrong. But I find it interesting either way that that it could be Styles. I mean, the options are going to be like Styles, Scott, Boyd, or Isaac, and she's shown as being very close with Boyd, like she runs off with him and stuff, but she's also shown as like actually like making out and hooking up with Isaac, though they are doing it as potentially a distraction, but I think they might just have like casual fun werewolf sex as it is, because they don't seem to have any boundaries really, so fandom often ships her with Boyd, but I actually like the idea of her with Isaac. You know, he also could have meant Scott, like if he wanted to try and get Scott, you know, ooh, I've got a better pairing for you than Allison. Here is a nice werewolf girl for you to settle down with, you know, like kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very interested in what people think about that line, and because I don't know if we're ever going to get an answer for it.
Oh God, can you even imagine though, like Derek trying to be alpha and also like matchmaker? Mm. I mean, there's just so many things wrong with that.
Yeah. One of the other things that I actually liked about this episode was, sorry, to go back to the beta stuff as well, Erica and Boyd at the lacrosse game, when coach asks Boyd to play and Erica like tries to stop him and says, Derek won't like this. And Boyd says, but I will. And I thought that was like a real nice moment of not necessarily like rebellion, but like Boyd's independence. Like he took the bite for his own benefit and because mm-hmm. he wants to be normal and included in life and all of that kind of thing, that he wants to be on the team. He wants to, you know, have friends and be appreciated. And it's funny because, again, I don't understand why he wasn't originally. But then even when he does well, the team is all cheering together and he's, like, off to the side on his own still. So, yeah, Boyd, I don't know, he's a conundrum.
That's actually really interesting, and it just made me think that when the Alpha Pack come into town next season, do you think they're going to try to recruit Boyd, because he seems like he'd be a lot more susceptible to their manipulation as far as like wanting to be alpha. And because you're right, he did sort of rebel and he's independent and he sort of is doing this for himself. So if he thinks he can get ahead with the Alpha Pack, you know, I wonder if they're going to try to get him over to their side.
Yeah. I don't know. I definitely think we're going to have to see something about it. Like, perhaps the Alpha, you know, because at the end of the season, Erica and Boyd are off together. And if Erica's not coming back, maybe he'll, you know, maybe she's been killed and he'll come back, like, after having, you know, been with the Alpha Pack or something like that and brainwashed by them or something. I don't know. Another couple of quick things, because there are some rather big points that we haven't got to yet. But one of the other big things is, Matt. Like, I know that we're meant to hate Matt, but I keep not being able to hate Matt, Karen. I know. Like, and he's even, I'm like watching him, I'm like, you're creepy and you're a douche. You're like really rude and really creepy, but I still love you because he has such good chemistry with everyone. He has amazing chemistry with Danny. We see a little bit later on that Danny might have a bit of a thing for him. He has such good chemistry with like Scott's mum. Like, I'm like, oh, you guys, I like that. Not even necessarily a shipping weight. He just has really good chemistry with everyone. And it might just be because he's a good actor, but I'm still not able to hate Matt. And so it's stressing me out.
Well, no, because I feel the exact same way. Like, Matt is legitimately one of my favorite characters of the season. And it's completely stupid because he's one of the worst guys on the show right now.
Yeah.
But I love him, and I was really sad when, you know, he's gone. And but yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. And I mean, just to tie into that as well a little bit, like with Danny, I mean, Danny calls in Matt to help him with the video, and that's kind of where we see most of his interactions in this episode, besides when he's talking to Scott's mum. But the trust that Jackson gives Danny when he hands over the video, like, you know, all jokes aside about, like, Danny being like, you know, I don't want to watch you in bed, you're not my type, it's pretty strong. Like, it's if what Jackson suspects is on the tape, and he hands it over to Danny to help him, that's, like, really deep friendship, if you know what I mean, and it's, like, a nice moment in their friendship. We don't get a massive amount of development in regards to what their friendship is like. And, you know, you have a lot of people asking, why is Danny friends with this guy, like, when he's so horrible? But, yeah, it was really nice to me to sort of think about what that meant, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it that way before, but you're absolutely right that, I mean, he obviously trusts Danny a lot.
Yeah, and there are a few moments during the season, like, where you just see, like, they clearly really, really, really care about each other, even though they don't, you know, verbalize it in the way that Scott and Styles do. And I would like to, yeah, see more of their history as well. Mainly just Danny is a bro, so he's a good, good man. So, yeah. Another thing I was going to quickly ask you, another bit of a moral conundrum, is with the training of the betas, just to go back to that for a second, Derek, sort of Isaac complaining about, like, you know, needing to go off and heal and Derek breaking his arm. Do you think that that's inappropriate after what Isaac has been through with his father? Or do you think that now he's a werewolf, that kind of thing is considered differently because of his ability to, not just his ability to heal, but like they kind of do that all the time. Like, that's kind of, like, not even considered that big a deal. But do you think that the fact that Derek rescued Isaac from his abusive father just to start breaking his arm is not that big a deal? Or do you think it is, like, kind of a bit wrong?
Oh, man, I did not even think about that, to tell you the truth. But now that you bring it up, it is sort of like, wow, you know, like, he really did just do that to some kid who had been basically abused. I mean, not his whole life. We did find out that his dad wasn't always like that, but for a good majority of it. But I think there is a point, though, that he's going to heal. It really isn't going to hurt him for that long, which is funny to think because his arm's broken. But I think he's also trying to teach Isaac and the rest of them about pain and about getting through it and surviving, like he says. So on the one hand, it is sort of like okay, I guess, because he needs to teach them those lessons. Yeah. But on the other hand, like, to do that to somebody who had been abused is kind of harsh.
Like, it means something. Like, it seems to mean something different, obviously, like, in this circumstance. But it's still a bit of a, like, wow, you just did that, and he had that happen, and yeah. Yeah, I don't know, it was just something that I sort of noticed, and I was like, that's probably not the greatest way to treat him right now. But yeah, I mean, Isaac didn't seem to take it like that. Like, I mean, I don't know, we see a bit more, but it just interested me, basically. Boyd looked fairly horrified at Derek doing it. He looked kind of horrified about the whole thing. He clearly thinks Derek is a bit of an idiot, but oh well. What was your one about Scott and Stiles?
Okay. So this is one of my bigger points for the discussion of this episode. And this scene takes place when Lydia is crying in her car and Stiles finds her. And he's sort of torn between wanting to stay with Lydia and cheer her up and talk to her and having to go. What were they doing?
He was looking for the bestiary.
He had the keys. Okay, yeah.
He had the keys, and he was like, he found her on the way to go into the school.
Yeah. He was torn between wanting to help Lydia and cheer her up and having the keys and needing to go into Gerard's office to look for the bestiary. And to me, this was actually kind of significant because if you think about it, if that was Allison crying in the car and Scott was the one that saw her and he was torn between the two, I think he would have chosen Allison.
Yeah,
whereas Stiles sees the big picture and he knows the stakes. And I don't want to say that Scott is selfish because I don't think it's necessarily like a selfish act to want to help Allison, you know, if she were in that situation. But I guess to me, Stiles is a lot more selfless in that he sees the bigger picture and he knows what's at stake and he knows what needs to get done and he's willing to do it.
Yeah, totally. Like the fact that he was like, yeah, I have to go do this. It was, you know, and he clearly didn't want to leave her. And like he said that to Derek, you know, when Derek was accosting him. But yeah, it did. Definitely, I don't think Scott would have sort of thrown it all in to be like, oh, Allison, let me help you. And, you know, Stiles definitely could have had that moment to bond with her, to help her and to, you know, make their relationship a lot closer. And, you know, he couldn't do it. Like, because obviously he didn't know he was going to be stuck away for hours, but he couldn't do it because he had the task at hand and he's so much more focused on that. And, yeah, it's definitely very representative. And we see that has backlash, like, later. There's you know, later episode where, you know, Scott's like, oh, Stiles, Lydia still isn't talking to Stiles because he ditched her when she was crying in her car or whatever. And Lydia must be very confused at this point about how Stiles feels about her. you know, being like, oh, you finally got an opening and you don't take it, okay. But again, it's something that I wish, you know, I wish and hope Lydia knew about the whole scene, the whole werewolf scene, and so that she could be more understanding of what's going on for everyone as well.
Yeah.
I guess we can go from that into what happens next, which is after Stiles gets the bestiary with Stiles and Derek in the pool, which is definitely one of the more intense scenes of the show in general, and, you know, one a lot of people like a lot for the stericky goodness, I guess, and one that was definitely intended to mean something. But objectively, it's very interesting about them as people because usually we do see Styles as sort of being really pragmatic, but basically, you know, he's very conflicted about, you know, oh, do I go to the phone? Do I go to Derek? But he sees Derek drowning and he, you know, can't not help him because, as I said, to him, it is a... I've said this before, that Styles really just sees Derek as another legitimate human with a right to life, if you know what I mean. He's not one of those, oh, you're a werewolf, you're, you know, you can just kill you and it's not a big as deal as killing a person, if you know what I mean, which is the attitude that a lot of people seem to have. Like, I think that if someone is a person with a personality, that they are a person, whether their DNA is completely human or not. And shows like Buffy, Supernatural, even, you know, this show, even the attitude of the Hunters on Teen Wolf, it's like if someone isn't a genetically human, even if they have a personality, a heart, a soul, and feelings, then they're considered like, oh, like, you can kill them, it's no big deal. Like, Buffy kills millions of vampires who, while they might have a drive to go kill people, also have, like, emotions and personalities, and she doesn't care about killing them because they also have the urge to be killers, but at the end of the day, they are what they are. Like, it's not their own fault, it's part of their genetic makeup, they're predators, and Styles has always really treated Derek like a person, you know, like, as opposed to the Hunters being like, oh, if it's a werewolf, even though it's a person, we can kill it. So Styles goes in and saves him, and that's, you know, nothing less than I expected. However, once he's sort of, we get there and it's like 2 hours later and Styles is still treading water, helping Derek stay above the water, and, you know, God knows what they've been talking about in that time. But Derek gets to the point where he's kind of like, he thinks basically, he says something that implies that Styles has been doing it for selfish reasons, like that Styles has saved Derek because Derek is the one who's going to be able to fight the Kanema, that's the reason why he's tried to help Derek. And Styles says, oh, so that's why I've been holding you up for the past 2 hours? And when Derek kind of spells out why he thinks Styles has been holding him up for Styles' own survival, Styles is so pissed at him that he lets him go. Like, so why do you think Styles was doing it? Just because he believed that Derek, you know, had the right, he didn't want to watch Derek or, like, another person who in this situation was innocent die? Or what do you think the deal is there?
Yeah, I think it's simple. I think it's as simple as it was the right thing to do. You know, I mean, yeah. He couldn't watch somebody drown and he couldn't just let Derek die. And I think, I mean, maybe in the back of his head, it was sort of like, you know, we need Derek around because he's a werewolf and he's at least kind of controlling these other werewolves and he knows things that we don't. But at the same time, I think it was more like, okay, this person fell into the pool and they're paralyzed and now I need to go save them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it was totally just the right thing to do.
Totally. And it just, poor Derek and his trust issues, that he thinks that someone wouldn't do that for him just because he's a person who's not at fault and drowning. Like, he thinks the only reason that Styles would help him is because Styles is, like, calculatedly being like, well, we need to keep him around as a weapon almost, if you know what I mean. And
yeah, and I think Derek assumes that of people because he's that way. You know, I mean, yeah. He's the alpha and he's trying to build up this pack and make these people do things that he wants them to do, and he's trying to put all the pieces in place for this game. And, you know, this is the sort of thing that he would have done, and he just automatically assumes that everybody else is like him too.
Yeah, and it's just interesting for Styles because Styles is very pragmatic and does actually think very logically and coldly about a lot of things, but when it comes down to it, like in this circumstance, he's not just going to let some, like, all, he's, you know, made jokes aside about, like, oh, can't we just kill Derek kind of thing, but, like, in this situation, Derek is a person drowning in a pool who's entirely innocent, you know, of the scenario, and Styles is not just going to be like, oh, yeah, you can die because whatever. And, yeah, it's just really, really interesting to me that they think that way about each other, you know, that Derek doesn't assume that anyone would help him, and that Styles wasn't actually thinking that pragmatically and was actually thinking just as a good person, then he'd consider Derek worth saving as a person just for his right to live.
Yeah.
It's definitely somewhat of a turning point, I would say.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
It kind of it also kind of knocks Derek off this, like, crazy arrogant thing that he's had going, like, for the past few episodes, like, because at the very end, after he's gotten out of the pool, he's very shaken and he's very much, he's not quite, like, season one vulnerable, but he's very much not being the way he was before with the sunglasses and the creepy smiles and everything.
Yeah.
And there's a bit that happens there that I've had a few people point out to me before, which is where they're discussing the Kanemar and he's like, oh, it's not normal, and Style goes, an abomination. And he kind of looks straight at Derek, like he's calling Derek an abomination, and Derek looks really, like, vulnerable and upset, and it makes me wonder what the hell they talked about in that pool for 2 hours.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just an interesting, very much, you know, slash aside of a turning point for their relationship and what they're willing to do for one another and how that is all going to end up.
Yeah. So the last point that we have here is about Gerard again. And, okay, so at the end of the episode, we have Gerard who stabs Scott and basically threatens him, saying that if you don't do something for me, I'm going to kill your mother. And the fact of the matter is that I understand why Gerard hates werewolves with that whole thing that happened with Kate. I can understand why he has such a vendetta against them and why he doesn't have a problem killing them, even if they didn't do something, even if they're children, because he thinks they're all dangerous. But how does he justify threatening to kill Scott's mom when she's completely human and actually doesn't know anything and doesn't even have anything to do with what's been going on?
Because he's crazy.
Yeah.
No. At the moment, it is really hard to look at and justify in any way. And, I mean, there is no justification for it even later on. But what we discover later is that his motives are 100% selfish. They're not even about hating werewolves. At the moment, when you look back over the season, his hating werewolfness, his thing, oh, I'm doing this all because I hate every werewolf so much, is a front for his actual genuine selfish motives, which is total self-preservation. So even that aspect of him hating werewolves, whether it's true or not, is actually a front and an excuse hiding his genuine motives, which are messed up. And so I think that is why he's willing to threaten Scott's mother, not because of his opinions about werewolves and stuff in general, but just because of knowing his real motivations and the amount that he's able to go through to get that.
Yeah, that's true. He's just crazy.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that, I mean, we'll get to it in time, but it kind of reminds me of that bit in Harry Potter where Dumbledore is having conversation with the kind of adult Tom Riddle being like, you know, and he says, there's nothing worse than death, Dumbledore, and Dumbledore says, the fact, you know, that you have always failed to acknowledge that there are many things worse than death has been your problem the whole time, or what exactly Dumbledore says, but it definitely reminds me of, like, yeah, Gerard's horrible actions definitely come from, like, the place of failing to acknowledge that there are a lot worse things, you know, in the world than dying.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he thinks that, because if he's been a hunter for his whole life, you know, you'd think he'd be kind of used to the idea of laying his life on the line every day and not knowing if he's going to go home that night.
Yeah. But, ugh, I hate him so much. Anyway.
Anyway. All right, let's get into the news now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the first one we have is that season 3 is going to feature at least one gay sex scene. And this little tidbit came from Zaptuit. And they basically just said that it was going to involve Danny and that Danny is going to have a bigger role in season 3 as well. And there's the possibility that it could just be, you know, his new boyfriend or somebody that doesn't really have a significance to the plot. But more than likely, it might be with one of the Alpha Pack twins because we know that they're going to be going after a few of Scott's friends in order to seduce them. So what did you think when this news came out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just impressed that Danny is going to have a big enough role to warrant you know, like if we're caring about his plot enough to be seeing his sex life, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that's good. I mean, I'm sure that it'll be handled as nicely as all of the other romantic scenes in the show have been so far, which has been very genuine and very realistic as so far. But yeah, I'm of the opinion that he is going to, yeah, be dating one of the Alpha twins. I don't know if he's going to know that the guy's a werewolf or not, but I just don't want him to get hurt. I don't want someone to pretend to like Danny. I want him to really like Danny. I want the Alpha twin to be like, no, I'm not being in your alpha pack anymore. I'm going to be with Danny. If that's, you know, like I would love to see one of the Alpha pack turn tables. I mean, if they are villains, like, I don't know, we don't know if they're exactly bad guys. Yeah, I mean, they're clearly opposing, they want to recruit people, I guess, or try and get more alphas, or maybe they want to wipe all of Derek's pack out. I don't know, we don't know if they're bad guys exactly, but if they are, I would love to see one of them, especially one of the ones who's sent after the friends to date them, to be like, no, I actually like this person, so I'm not going to play this game anymore.
Yeah, and I have a feeling the Alpha Pack's going to be a lot more complicated than just being a regular set of villains, you know, because there's so much gray area, as we've discussed before, with the villains and whether or not, you know, they're actually doing something wrong in their eyes and if they're evil. So, yeah, I completely agree, though. I don't want anything to happen to Danny. I like him so much.
Yeah.
The next bit of news is just a little thing that came from E! Online, and this one is about the fact that Lydia is going to be explaining Jackson's absence. And they say, basically, we'll learn what happened to him thanks to a quippy explanation from Lydia. And this definitely seems to be sort of right up her alley. I can just kind of picture her saying these lines. And we find out later that Allison has been away from Beacon Hills all summer and hasn't actually been in contact with any of her friends. So I have a feeling that this is going to be not only for the audience's benefit, but also for Allison's benefit, since she's been kind of out of the loop.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they definitely have the potential to make it work pretty smoothly. So that will be good. And it'll be, yeah, I guess quite sad for Lydia. Like, obviously the end of the season, she was very, you know, in love with him, and then, you know, they seem to be sort of getting it together, and it'll be just very interesting to see her sort of cover that up with sort of a, you know, a bitchy remark that she doesn't really mean under the surface.
Mm-hmm. And then this next one's really interesting. This came from one of the people who works on the set, and he tweeted out that he was excited he's going to be able to work with, how do you say her name? Is it Edie Mays?
Edie, I think, yeah.
Okay. He said he was excited to be able to work with Edie Mays, who plays Victoria, Allison's mother. And he just said, joyous that I get to see and work with my lovely friend Edie Mays again today on Teen Wolf. Love this woman. And, you know, we saw this, immediately threw it up on Hypeable, and was like, oh, does this mean she's coming back? We know that there's going to be a flashback episode, so perhaps, you know, it's just going to be her earlier on with Chris or something like that, because he's supposed to, there's supposed to be a Hunter flashback alongside the Derek flashback, so it's possible that we just see her early on.
Yeah.
And then his original tweet had been taken down pretty quickly, and then he tweeted and since deleted another one that said that she was just visiting the set. But the thing is, he said, I get to see and work with her. So
yeah.
I'm wondering if they're just keeping it a secret.
Yeah, and he accidentally tweeted that. That seems pretty, pretty accurate.
Yeah,
and I don't know how that they'd make her reappear, but yeah, I can't imagine that you'd say something like that, like, just off, you know, the top of your head. And yeah, I think that, yeah, he probably was like, oh, oops, shouldn't have said that in those words, messed that up and had to delete it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, so I won't be surprised if we do see her in, again, a flashback or something like that.
Yeah, I think that could be cool. It'd be nice to see her again, maybe when she's a little younger, to see if she's different at all or something like that.
Yeah.
The next article is all about Derek and his new apartment, and it turns out that the one set sketch that we got earlier on, actually back in December, with it was sort of just, you know, these wooden beams and this open brick sort of style with a spiral staircase down the left side. That turns out that it's actually Derek's new apartment, which was pretty cool. And Jeff Davis said about the apartment, "The loft will not only be the location for numerous werewolf confrontations, but will also provide for a far more romantic side to Derek. When a character grows and takes on a new attitude and lets in new feelings, it helps to have the setting change as well."
Interesting. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's nice that he has an actual place to live as opposed to a train carriage or a burnt out shell of a house. And again, like, maybe this will be him living more within society, like, normally, and maybe he'll stop having this, like, attitude that he can do stuff like walk off with people in the hospital bed and stuff like that. Like, that, you know, he is actually a normal citizen as opposed, while still being a werewolf. But yeah, I guess that he is going to want to try and have a bit more settled, like, you know, a bit more settled stuff in his life, and I guess that could turn to something romantic, but you know, that should be, I hope it's, you know, I hope it's good. Like, I hope it's like a, like an interesting character that has like that, then their romance has an interesting plot, as opposed to just being like, oh, yeah, we've made Derek care about someone and then we're gonna kill them to make Derek feel some more pain.
Exactly.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly what I was going to say, too, that I hope that there's, you know, a point to the character, not just, oh, let's have him fall in love with this person, then we're going to kill her, and he's going to be back to, like, grumpy cat Derek, and they're just going to start all over. But I don't think that'll happen. I think there is going to be more of a point.
You know what I want
it
to be? I want it to be him being, like, having to, like, eat all of his words to Scott. I want it to be some really cool girl who doesn't know anything about werewolves, and that he pretends he's normal. And that Scott and Styles, like, catch him out, like, going on dates, like, pretending to be normal, and just look at him being like, what the hell is this?
Yes.
And, yeah, that's what I want now.
That is, can you imagine, like, him taking her to, like, dinner and a movie, and then Scott and Styles just seeing him, like,
and maybe that's why,
would be so funny.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen a few pictures of him wearing different coloured shirts and stuff, so maybe that's his attempt to pretend to be normal, like, going out into society, like, you know, he's not wearing black or grey or white wife beaters, he's got, like, t-shirts and stuff now, so, like, yeah, maybe he's, like, going out being like, oh, yeah, I'm cool, let's go on a casual date to the art gallery, and, you know, they're like, oh, my God. Anyway, sorry, I'm just making things up now.
We kind of ran with that one.
Yes.
All right, and then the last article is also about Derek, actually, and this one has to do with the flashback episode, and we learned that they're looking for a young Derek who's supposed to be about 14 to 15 years old. And this is pretty significant because it kind of tracks down more specifically when the flashback is going to take place. And if you do go by the
time
On Fire novel, he was about 16 years old when he met and slept with Kate. So this is going to be about 1 to 2 years before the fire happened. And so there's a good chance that we'll actually be seeing his sister, his family, his parents, actual healthy pack dynamic. And I'm definitely pretty excited about this.
Yeah, definitely. The only thing I'm a bit, not confused about, but like a bit, the thing that's going to make it slightly less satisfying for me is that I know what Tyler Hoechlin looked like at 14 and 15. He was working at 14 and 15. So seeing someone else play him as a kid, you know, like, that's not actually just the younger version of him, like, is going to confuse my mind a bit, because I, you know, it's a pity that we can't go back in time and get young Tyler Hoechlin to play young Tyler Hoechlin. But because it's, like, someone who we know, you know, we know what he looks like as a teenager, that he obviously can't play himself in the flashback. I mean, unless they, like, shave him and, like, thin down his body, I suppose they could. But, like, I can't imagine if they did a flashback with him to 16 with Kate, that they would make it not him, if you know what I mean. They'd cast another person. The people would be like, who is this? I think that they'd just get him really clean shaven, get him longer hair and maybe Photoshop his body so it isn't quite as built, and that they would, you know, have him and probably make him smile more and have him play that younger role. And 14 or 15 is only a couple of years before that, so I'm interested to see how they go about casting that and what happens, if you know what I mean. But flashbacks, yeah. I'm all here for that. I want to see Laura, I want to see the parents, I want to see Peter, I want to see everyone. Maybe he'll be taking a trip to his family doctor, you know, Deaton, and getting his, you know, rabies shots and stuff.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway.
That is too funny. Okay, so there's actually a lot more news that's been coming out recently, but we're just sort of going to break it up a little bit. Because we've been off the air for a little while, we're going to record another episode soon, and then we'll talk about the rest of the news there. So yeah. Don't worry, we haven't forgotten anything. We will get to it shortly. Yeah. But we're just going to jump into the one listener feedback that we have right now and then wrap up the episode. So this one comes from Tumblr, and it's from Gryffindor1991. And they ask, do you guys have any theories for what the Argents did to the principal after Victoria tortured him and shape-shifted? Gerard just shows up as the principal afterward, and no one questions it. It's a bit strange.
No, that whole thing was still really messed up, because it's like, that's, as I titled the episode, apparently we torture people now. Like, it's really, yeah, really strange that they did that, and I mean, I don't know if they just dumped him in a ditch and said, don't say anything to anyone, or we'll come after you again, or whatever, and how, you know, if he got, you know, if he was gone, that they automatically were like, oh, this guy could be a principal, let's just let him be the principal. They must have, like, people paid off in, like, because they had that guy who was, like, posing as a cop. They've had, like, mm-hmm. the guy that was the posing as the FBI agent in the last season, like, that was, oh, no, maybe that's this season. Anyway, it seems like the Hunters, whenever they need to, have people who they can pay off or are are secretly part of their association, kind of like the Illuminati, that let them get away with stuff. So perhaps they had something happen in that way in the getting the principal thing. But, you know, it does seem a bit weird that he just rocked up there straight away, and that I can't imagine that they, like, killed this guy. Like, it's Gerard, but I can't imagine that they would have gotten away with that or thought it was justified just so we could get Gerard into the school in order to monitor what was going on there.
Yeah, I think they must have, like, blackmailed him or, you know, tortured him until he agreed that he wasn't going to, you know, come back, and just had him resign or something like that. I definitely don't think they killed him either.
Yeah, you'd hope not anyway.
Yeah, who knows at this point.
Okay, I think that's everything we've got for this week. We're going to record less than a week from now, so the episodes should be released 1 week apart. Like, this episode should be released, and then the following one should be released 1 week after this one. So if it's not, bug me about it on Twitter. Be like, Natalie, have you finished editing the episode yet? Because it is a little bit of a slow process, but we do hope to try and catch ourselves up by getting these out 1 week apart as opposed to the 2 week schedule. So, yeah, hopefully you've enjoyed this one. Sorry for being gone for a couple of weeks, but we shall see you very soon.
Bye, guys.
Bye. In this situation, Derek is entirely innocent and is a person drowning in a... Oh, sorry. Plane.